You've got some reads to
Well, you haven't said hello. We get this is like a regular. This has now become the regular thing. Is you don't intro, you put it on me, and then I say do the intro.
People know now. Hello, everybody. There welcome to the Outlaw Picks podcast.
It's just nice. Like, if I come and see you,
podcast. What?
Like if I come and see you, still I know you, but I'm still going to say hello, aren't I?
I suppose, but
that's what I mean.
Well, you've been hanging out all morning, so
anyway, stop stealing the ad time. Today, we're back in our threads. Unban Marino are sponsoring us once again. Good friends with Unban now, and we're developing a really nice relationship with them.
Ollie's really good friends with Unban now.
Don't start. If the people at Unban are listening, don't listen to anything Dan has to say about this in the next 20 to 40 seconds, because it's not true.
The hoodie and the t-shirt I've got are lovely.
Honestly, you have a box somewhere that you don't know about.
I will say the gloves that Ollie was wearing for training the other day look a lot like Merino socks.
There's no way. I would not take those socks. They were yours. Anyway.
It is really good stuff.
It's great stuff. We have we're establishing a long relationship with Unban now.
I keep it in a locked safe when Ollie's around.
Yeah. I think you put it away when I come here anyway, so you can keep this narrative going that you haven't got any.
You keep
Ollie's
the narrative
today.
Of a heat button going. You're looking around because
that's the radiator. That's why I just need to. I know the game.
What you?
I know
what
the game is. I just don't know where the button is. I know where the heat comes from. Anyway, if you would like to jump on the Unban Marino bandwagon,
palm. Did you see that?
Palmed them off. Go to unbanmarino.com and drop in Outlaw for 15% off. And we're also brought to you by C4. C4 have jumped on board. Relatively recently, I think this is the second or third time that we've been sponsored by them. We particularly were interested in their naturals range, which is here, the C4 Smart Energy. We chatted about a few podcasts ago, but they have a couple of things in here. So the Innova-T system is a way of getting the caffeine into here without chemically synthesizing it. So instead, they ferment green tea, extract the caffeine that way and put the caffeine into the C4 Smart Energy, which we digged.
We
dig them, and they got us through a couple of, they got us through a ride along, and they get the boys through a few arduous training sessions as well.
They do, especially
a Monday morning. So if you'd like to jump on board with C4 Energy, go to c4energy.com and put the code FULLREPTILE in, and they'll give you 30% off your purchases, which is significant.
That is significant. Yeah.
And last little shout out, once again, we're building a community on the MMA Fanatics app. So we have a full reptile league and we are competing against everyone else that's on the league. There's a good few hundred people on that league now. It's just for fun. If you go to getfanatics.app and join up and play along with us, and every week we put our picks in there and we see how we go. Solid mid-table performance normally.
Solid mid-table. Reliable team player.
exactly.
No standout
always
stars
shows
over
up,
here.
Never wins.
2 goals a season. Mm. Okay.
There we go. So busy time for us.
Mate.
There's loads going on, isn't
there? There's so much going on.
In particular, have been non-stop, as well as everyone else up at the gym. We have Cage Warriors Trilogy coming up this weekend.
Yep.
You've been working a lot with Dean Truman, Dean at lightweight rather than at featherweight. It's been a very interesting move, isn't
it?
So
much better.
There's someone we'll talk about in the preview that has, Moicano, I think, is up at lightweight instead of feather now, and it hasn't gone all his way, I don't think, but he looks better.
You know, exactly.
He just looked better.
It's probably not going to go all your way in any weight class.
No.
But it's better to not go all your way and not be taking punches to a dehydrated brain.
Yeah.
You know, and I just think obviously there's a culture around weight cutting, which we all understand and to an extent we've partaken in. I mean, you know, me in particular, I've drifted somewhere between cutting no weight at all and stepping on the scales at 170 all the way up to cutting 22 pounds fight week, which is, you know, the real stupid end of it. And of course, a little bit of a weight cut, we get it.
Yeah.
But people build their games and their confidence around the fact they're going to be bigger than their opponent. It's 21st century.
Yeah.
It's about being better these days. And these boys in the gym are better.
Yeah.
And the more healthy they are in training, the better they're going to be in the long run.
Yeah.
And we're seeing it. You know, we're seeing it.
I mean, this is an insight into a conversation we're like actively having, hey, about, you know, what are we going to do? What is the culture in our gym? You know, it's up to us to establish our culture in our gym. We don't have to do it the way everyone else has done it forever. You know, that's just following, following the footsteps of everyone else. We can establish our own culture. And one of the points that's come up in discussion a lot is, where is your energy? You have X amount of energy. If all of your energy is into thinking about not eating for a large part of camp, which, you know, if you're going to make featherweight for certain people, it's not just about that last week. You know, it's like a lot of that camp is...
It's a lifestyle choice, isn't it?
Yeah. And obviously you're not naturally at that place. So as soon as you have done with your fight, you're then like smashing as many calories as you can. And then the cycle all starts again. You know, maybe we don't need to do that. If we have X amount of energy and we're not thinking about that all the time, now we have that energy to put into the training.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have world-class coaches at the gym. We need the attention of our fighters to be on getting better. And yeah, that's what we're pushing for. Eh?
Yeah. When it comes to the point, what I'm observing more and more in MMA is it's down to decision-making.
Mm.
And it's not necessarily down to having more horsepower. Like, sometimes it helps. Like, you know, I feel like I've been ragging on Marvin Vettori recently, but he's for no reason other than he's just a good example of a guy that's got, you know, 80% skill and the 20% made up from horsepower.
Mm.
You know, and a lot of it
it's like a buffer,
isn't
it? It's like a horsepower buffer.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, and he's moving in the right direction, and he's always going to have that 20% of horsepower. So the further he jogs towards 100% technique, you know, the better he's going to be generally. A few pounds, it doesn't make that much of a difference in a fight. I just don't think it does. At the very high level, maybe, but I still think it's decision making. And I think a lot of that is down to being fresh and alert and adaptive in the moment.
I mean, like you've said a few times, what other sport would you do that in and expect them to be able to level up their technical and tactical at the same time?
Yeah,
like you're not going to do that. I know there's weight class sports, but again, they're operating out of tradition. They're not operating out of best practice. They're doing what is thought to be done.
Yeah.
You know, this is what you do in this sport.
That's it.
You know, and that's the same in a lot of different sports. But the beauty about MMA and the beauty about having our own place is we do whatever we want.
Mm-hmm.
If we want to change the culture and we want to see if we can do it this way, we'll do it. That's what we'll do.
Yeah.
You know, and I think the fighter feedback is very important because, you know, they're the ones that feel it, and it's, you know, it's going in the right direction. It's not going to guarantee they're going to win. It's not going to guarantee they're going to lose. But, you know, it's striving for health as well as increments in performance is probably, there's something right about it, right?
Yeah.
It just feels right when you think about it and discuss it and talk about it and plan it out. That the health of our guys is going to underpin their performance. Mm-hmm. And you can boil them down, but you can only boil them down for so long. Zabit, we always talk about Zabit. You know, what happens if he wasn't at that weight?
That's why I think he's limited at three rounds. And that's why I think, the idea of fighting over five rounds would make him uncomfortable, because maybe that's the point where his weight cut starts to show. Yeah. And the reality is he's 6'2".
Yeah. Like,
because you can make the weight, it doesn't mean you should. And I just, you know, it's something I've noticed across the sport. Like people that are like not making their weight cut 50% of their training camp are always going to be better. People that are not dieting the majority of their time are going to be able to think about technique. They're going to be able to improve. They're going to be more responsive in the gym. They're going to, like, we've just done 2 hours this morning with two guys that are water loading, and they're laughing, they're joking, and they're, you know,
they're absorbing information.
We did 2 hours of good work, and we're fight week, and they're still getting better.
Yeah,
and Truman's still going to have to cut to make lightweight.
Yeah, a little
bit. It's not arduous all the way through training camp like it was for featherweight. Like, we've just not seen his potential yet, because it's not about being on a diet all year round, is it?
No.
And you don't want to put people in those situations where then they've got that Ricky Hatton response.
Yeah.
Where they're not going, okay, we'll cut 10 pounds to get to the weight class, and then we'll go up 15 after the weight class, and we'll hang around there and be big and healthy and strong. Like, he was just stopping and getting fat, and then you know, boiling right back down again.
And you know,
that's a stress response though, right?
Yeah, and there's some hormonal fuckery that goes along with that. It takes, we've seen, like with people that are close to us, that it takes a long time to get physical mistakes and physical pressures that you shouldn't be under reset and rebalanced, and, you know, trying to get them to find homeostasis again, especially with head trauma alongside everything we're talking about. You know, it takes a long time.
Yeah.
It's very difficult.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, so we're functioning it. Josh Plant has been training with us. He's on the Cage Warriors card. James Hendon hasn't been training with us, but he's a friend of ours and a friend of Full Reptile. He's on the card as well. So it should be three nights. It should be fun.
I'm excited for it. I just think, I mean, each card's well matched. The way that Ian Dean matches these fights, he's always been amazing at matching cards. And I just think that, you know...
Time on the coal face. How long has he been doing it for?
He just sees the sport in such an interesting way. You know, he I think he's got a very analytical mind. And I think he sees a lot of the patterns that, you know, other analysts do. But he sees it in a matchmaking thing. He sees them like
pieces
of a jigsaw that fit together well. And it, oftentimes when I'm researching, I think I spot something that you put in. I'm like, ah, okay.
Got it.
I see why you match those two guys now. Because he's really good all around, but he's got a vulnerability for head kicks.
Yeah.
This guy he's fighting, he's got two head kick knockouts, but there will be four cage. You know what I mean? It's like, he's like trying to tease the best parts out of each fighter when the way they're matched.
I like it. Even when we go through... You know, when we go through cards and we've researched both sides, I'm like, oh, I appreciate that.
Mm.
I get what you're doing. That's nice. That's a good idea.
Yeah, I had a few of those on this card this weekend.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Ige against Korean Zombie first. Are there any fights on the undercard you wanted to mention?
Casey O'Neill.
Awesome, yeah. Really
She's
good.
She's nasty.
Yeah, she is.
I've never met Casey. I don't know her, but she punches like she really means it.
Mm-hmm.
She goes after it
like Amanda
Nunes
does.
There's
grit behind it. Yeah,
yeah. Like I thought she was. I thought she was very good. Didn't quite have her own her way. She made a couple of mistakes, but she adapted. She adapted really well. And she got the job done.
7-0 as well. Yeah. You know, she's going to progress faster.
Interesting the post fight as well. She was like, "I want to get better. I don't want to jump straight back in. I got some ground to cover, and I want a little bit of time to get better, and then I'll get back in."
That's cool.
That was a smart.
Yeah, that's good.
Smart mindset.
Yeah. I've got to jump to Kanaka Murata's elbow.
Ooh.
What do you do in that situation? Do you leave it to go to the end of the round? Do you stop it and let the doctor look at it?
Well,
I don't know. I mean, I've been debating in my head since the weekend, and
because it's not life threatening.
No, it's not.
It's not consciousness threatening.
No.
It's painful, but in actual fact, with the amount of adrenaline that's going on, you know, it might be actually mildly painful because, you know, you're hyped up and in a fight.
Yeah. It was like, obviously we talked about it the other week with Paul Craig twisting Jamal Hill's elbow off. But I don't know, there was something about that I thought to myself, that fight's over. Like, I just felt like that fight was over. Whereas I was watching Murata, I didn't expect her to get back into it, especially because she's a wrestler and taking people down with one arm is
hard enough.
And she's not—I mean, she's not a thunderous puncher.
No,
you know, she's got two Von Flue chokes on her record. Mm. You need two arms for
arm.
That. No.
Not with one arm. She's not going.
Yeah,
yeah. What do you do?
I don't know. I'm interested. In fact, let us know what you think in the comments because the jury's out on it.
Yeah,
I don't know what I would do if I was a referee. I think if it was on a lower level. Amateur, semi-pro, maybe early pro. I think I would stop it and get the doctor in and get it reset quickly.
I was going to say, how does she win? But I mean, I guess we've seen it. Like, who was the boxer we talked about?
Danny Williams.
Danny Williams came back to win it. You know, it only takes one. She could time something and win it.
But then, you know, if you're a boxer and you've got one arm that's disabled, that's 50% of your game.
Yeah.
If you're an MMA fighter and you've got one arm disabled, the majority of your game's done. Yeah. I mean, you know. Well, I mean, is it
coaches and officials' responsibility to save them from themselves?
I don't know.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just a rough road if you go down that road. Like, where do you step in and where do you don't? And
I mean, what's the potential risk of injury, like continued injury, the longer it stays out, or like if it gets like obviously Jamal Hill, his arm was getting twisted like a leg off a chicken. But with this one, it was dislocated and then there was no contact.
Mm.
And she was responsive to her opponent. Obviously, she couldn't use it. She literally couldn't lift it.
She takes another kick on that and the bone busts through the skin or, you know, rips out some veins and arteries and what have you. You know, we could be in a bit of trouble, but you just don't know, do you? I don't know. I don't really know where I stand because if you do start empowering... I guess a referee has a lot of responsibility and that's what they're there for. Do we want to heap that on them as well?
At what point are the stakes high enough for the referee to allow the fighter to work through a potential maiming?
Yeah.
I mean, it's weird. If it's a title fight, I'm just like, whatever. I mean, the doctor can check it at the end of the round, but if the round's still going, I'll still leave them. But they're champions in there.
I almost feel the opposite. when it comes to sort of head trauma, like make the early call. For if sure. you're going to make it, just make the early call because we.
But that is that's a different class entirely. Yeah. You know what I mean? For sure.
Like whereas arms and legs is a bit like, all right, you know what? The ligament's gone, so you can't do any more damage to that.
I mean, look how fucked up Ronnie Coleman is, and all he did was lift heavy things
a lot. Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like there's work.
And inject heavy things.
There you go. Yeah. Like we do know the risks when we're going in there. Yeah. You know. But I don't know. I'm interested to see what people say in the comments. Like, do you let a fight like that continue to the bell, or do you jump in and stop it and let the doctor check it?
Yeah, I don't know.
And where is the level?
Yeah.
You know.
And then if there
do you
is
allow maiming in 5-round fights?
Maybe. I'm not sure we're going to call it maiming if we're going to have this discussion here. But yeah, and then I mean whatever sort of gets decided, then it has to be standardized. And it has, you know, has to be taught and standardized. Like this is what we look for. This is when we call it, because the worst thing is always, you know, when you're thinking you're getting an uneven keel, depending on the referee, you know, you need standardization from refs.
Yeah.
And it's not that it's an easy job, but it needs to be instilled in them.
Mm.
Good to see Matt Brown.
I was just about to say, see him. I don't usually remember what picks I make. And I've not listened to the podcast back, but I am 99% sure that I said that Matt Brown was going to win.
Yeah, here. I think you just copied what I said.
No, is that right?
I think so.
No, I think I you said went the other way.
Get one for the old school.
No, I don't think you did. I think you went Diego Lima, didn't you? Did he go Diego Lima?
I think you did, to be fair.
Oh, what? You're jumping on Dan's side for a change? Yeah, what a surprise.
Well, you know.
Are you sure? Well, my boy Jamie says I picked Matt Brown.
Did he? Yeah, he did, because he said the old
one. Oh, yeah, fucking old mystery. Come on, man. You see that? Turncoat, straight away. Raptors, they move as a pack, don't they? You see that?
Self-preservation is key, though, for them, when it comes to it.
He looked good.
Yeah, he looked good. It's just time. Timing just rules, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just cracked him as
intention.
Well, didn't he?
Timing and intention. But Diego Lima just hangs out too much.
Yeah.
He just waits for the fight to come to him.
Absolutely.
Mm. I felt bad for Julian Erosa. Fight didn't even really get started, did it? I mean, Sung Woo Choi.
Beautiful left hook.
Yeah.
Like a beautiful left hook. He just seemed, for as long as it went, he just seemed a beat ahead of the game, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Which I wasn't expecting that at all. Like, Julian Erosa's a good, solid fighter, but I guess, you know, that's the
experience
game.
Experience is on his side, of course.
Yeah.
Marlon Vera looked good as well. Rough night for David Grant.
Rough night. He'd be sore for days, won't he? Both of them, I suppose.
Days. Did you see his face on his photo on his Instagram, all cut up? And good fight, good. But it was weird because it was like Grant won the first fight, didn't he?
Yeah.
But we still were like, this kind of feels like a mismatch a bit right now. I feel like Marlon Vera had moved ahead in the pack, and Davy Grant was still trying to.
I agree, but that's a bit like Davy Grant's remit. Like he seems the guy that plays the underdog really well and. You know, he wasn't too far off, was he? It was pretty close.
I mean, there was that last kid he knocked out. The quiet psychopath.
Which one?
What's his name? Jonathan Martinez. Is it Jonathan Martinez?
Yeah.
Yeah. The kid that he didn't want to talk in his fighter interview.
I remember you saying,
And then like 2 minutes before the end, I can't remember how we got into the subject of like the kids. At like the juvenile detention center near his house when he was growing up.
Got you.
And he was just like, he was fighting with kids that were being released from there all the time. And like he had like 15 videos on his phone of like backyard fights that he'd been in. I'm like, oh, you're a psychopath.
I get it.
That makes sense now why you didn't want to say anything to all of the other boring questions. And then when we talk about street fighting, you're like, look at this guy. I Muay Thai clinched him on a piece of cardboard and fucked him up. Okay. No, he was a lot of fun, that kid. He had a lot of potential. But
so he's 10-5.
And that was that step through, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Switch and
10-5.
Yeah, lovely.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah.
Good, decent card, wasn't it?
It was a good card.
Plenty of finishes.
Yeah.
Plenty to keep everyone excited.
Olenek, one for the old school.
Yeah.
And I've got to say something. I love Dom Cruz, but he said Spivak's name wrong 3 times in the first round. I sent it to you, didn't I? Spivak, Spavik... And Spivak. No, Spivik.
It's impressive to get 3 different ways in.
Especially when it's only a 6-letter word.
Yeah. And it's not the most complicated one you're going to come across either, is it?
I'm trying to think of some of the ones I got wrong. I called Gunnar Nelson Rick. I think that's probably one of the worst.
Rick Nelson?
I did call Robert Whittaker Forrest Whittaker once during commentary. And I've definitely called Gillian Robertson Gillian Anderson a couple of times.
Today, in fact.
Yeah. 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 What are you going to do?
Olenek lost. I thought that when you said that. Olenek lost, right?
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought you said you got one for the old school.
Yeah.
What, I lost for the old school?
I lost for the old school. Yeah, no, I was far too distracted with the fact that Dom Cruise was saying Spivak's name.
Yeah.
Olenek's got a bit of a haircut like yours. You're kind of a bit the same tribe, bro, aren't you?
This isn't a haircut.
Well, I'd imagine
this is not a haircut. This is the only thing you can really do.
No, he's working on his. He's working with his. Like you've just,
yeah,
you've just
saying
quit.
Mine's not. Oh yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah,
like he's still maintaining that bit of the back.
Yeah, I can't. Like,
you just
can't do that.
That's why he's still in the UFC at 56 years old.
There was that's why no stage was I in the UFC or was close to being in the UFC. It's fine.
You still have
he's
hair
tough
if
enough
you
to have that ridiculous haircut. I'm just gonna shave mine off. What are you gonna do about it? You take the piss out of his hair.
I could just picture it though. You know, sometimes you see people and you're like, there's a similarity between those two, like Alan Patrick and Francisco Trinaldo.
Right.
Like, there's this, you know what I mean? Yeah.
There's a genetic crossover at some stage,
exactly.
Way up the tree.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then I'm thinking, like, you know, if like a Viking longship pulled up on the beach,
yeah,
I'm seeing you get out one side, Bill Burr get out the other side, Keith Jardine's jumping out of the other side.
Bill Burr's at the back of that ship cracking jokes.
Olenek's definitely a part
definitely.
Of your crew.
Definitely. There's a few. I collect a few on my boat. There's a few on my boat. Tough boat.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
It's a tough boat.
Stewie Griffin at the back giving orders.
Him and Bill at the back. Bill's cracking jokes.
Yeah, come on, you bastards.
Anyway, enough about my hair. Lack of it.
Go and invade that town. I'll punch you through that fucking wall. Bill Burr. Do you watch F is for Family?
Yeah, but there's not been any series for a while.
No,
has there
hasn't.
I thought you said he was doing another one.
Did he?
And it's good. Like, I really... You got
awesome.
Me onto that, actually.
Oh,
it was good.
Awesome.
I like the theme tune.
Mm. Yeah,
I always
brilliant.
Leave the theme tune on, yeah.
Yeah. Have you seen... you watch Big Mouth?
No.
Oh, you've got to get into that. This is diverting into a full reptile radio.
Yeah,
you need to stay on course. Korean Zombie, just good, isn't he? He's just
very good.
See what I mean about him hanging out in the pocket, though?
Yeah.
Like, because he's not bothered about getting hit, he's entirely focused on when he's hitting them.
That's gotta have a lifespan, though, right? He's gonna hang around in the pocket when he shouldn't, surely.
But I think he has crack for it.
Yeah.
I mean, you think the Yair Rodriguez fight was because he was hanging heavy on his lead leg and Rodriguez caught him with that spinning elbow. Brian Ortega caught him with the same thing. Like, he does get caught. He does get caught flat, but I don't think Dan Ige's in that bracket of fighters that can affect him in that way.
Yeah.
I think there's a small bracket.
So tactically, like, he would have looked at him gone, I could probably hang out in the pocket a little bit longer than I would. Do you think that's the...
I think so.
It's that calculated.
Yeah, I think... Well, I think that's his game generally.
Yeah.
I think he likes to pressure, you know, heavy on the lead leg and offer his opponents the opportunity to try and hit him. Because... Mm. It most likely he's going to be able to get his head out of the way, but if he doesn't, he's not that bothered.
Yeah,
which just gives him a carelessness in the pocket.
Yeah, but it
what's
but opens
back.
Up the opportunity, right?
Yeah,
you can't have that opportunity without that recklessness or carelessness or being prepared to get whacked.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like if you look at his fight against Moicano, we were talking about it in the gym this morning. He's so present in the pocket that as he's under the jab of Moicano, looking at his chin, his right hand's landing, knocking him out, and it's like you. He's not thinking about anything else. He's got that movement pattern set in place, so he knows that when he's going in that direction, the jab's going straight over his shoulder, and there's the chin. Bang.
Yeah.
That's constant positive visualization in his head, and it might not even be a conscious thing that he's doing.
I mean, there's only, like, I say this not from a high level of striker myself, but there's only so many patterns, right? It's not like... The sport is at a level of striking where you just have no idea what could be coming at you.
Mm.
There's, you know, 20 patterns that are thrown with regularity, and you sort of know that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, everybody at that level, I would think, would have a very good read on what's coming. Like, you know,
I mean, you know, they are more
predictable. Can't grow a third arm and throw something out of nowhere.
But that's why the unpredictable fighters, the reckless fighters, are often
quite
effective because they come from odd angles.
Yeah, because we've chatted before about sort of fighting someone that doesn't know how to fight.
Mm.
There's a little bit of, oh, fuck, they could anything can happen.
Awkward
here.
Timing, like punches pretty much, come from weird angles. Yeah. They're like, ugh.
Right.
And, you know, it's weird. But like
wrestling with beginners is just a little bit weird sometimes because awkward. Shit happens where this. Oh, no, that's not how it goes.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's like pommeling with someone that's never pommeled before. Yeah. You know, it's just
elbows in the eye, eye socket. And
like trying to scratch their earlobes with their elbows. It's weird. But there is a value to that, and I think you can kind of go full circle with it, and that's where, like, when you have those set movement patterns, that's when a high level fighter like Adesanya will start to manipulate because he plays that game, that movement pattern. It's what we're doing in the gym today, you know, like working the, like, getting a reaction out of your opponent, giving him the impression that you're going to do one thing, knowing full well that he's going to move his arms or move his guard or do something.
Just one chest move ahead of him.
That's it.
Yeah, or make him make that chest move.
Yeah. And there's so many like ranges that you can play with. You know, you can keep shifting your center line side by side. You can keep going back and forth. You can go up and down in MMA. You know, you can change diagonally.
Yeah.
Which, depending on what stance you're in, it creates weird optical illusions, like people are further away than they actually are.
Yeah, well, we're talking about this popped right hand that makes you feel like you're at a different distance, and then you can still reach them, and they think they're out of reach, mm-hmm. but they're not out of reach, so they're just a couple of centimetres in reach. Yeah. Yeah.
And the other benefit to that, because that's another range that you play with, you know, as well as you've got your movement ranges, you're playing with the range of time.
Mm.
You know, like the feeling of a punch and the speed that they're anticipating that it's moving at, which is another reason why that lean right hand's good, because the shoulder comes forward and they go, huh, as if the punch is coming, and then you pop it afterwards. Yeah. And that like little stagger, like Pereira was using it on one of his knees in one of his finishes in Glory, which I'm going to record after this, the war room for it. But it's just a thing of beauty because he hits this guy with the right hand. Then he comes with a left hook and then he slides in as if he's going to knee and the guy braces and then he opens his guard and he slams the knee straight through the center. Yeah. But it's that play of timing, like his opponent goes bang, bang, bang. Bang.
Yeah. Mess up that regularity of it that you're used to. You're used to bam, 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 and then suddenly bam, bam, bam.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like Jimmy's been working a lot on, it's almost like a psychological play.
Mm.
Like that, the pull counter is like, but I'm not really hitting her. I'm just hitting you to piss you off. So you come at me and then I retreat. You're coming at me like, all right. And then I catch you on that, on that misstepped counter.
And playing that line between moving away so fast that you're out of range, but not too fast that you feel that they don't feel like it's worth chasing you.
Yeah, just got like, you just like, yeah, it's like
that elastic.
Tempt them, pat.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's wicked. I love it. There's a lot to learn, man.
There's so much
to learn.
I love it. I still feel like I'm scratching the surface every day.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. UFC Fight Night coming up again and Volkov.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're starting with
Medeiros
against Hadjovic.
I've got Medeiros versus Hadjovic.
Excellent. Let's start there.
Let's have a look. He's in a bit of a spot, Yancy, isn't he?
He's always in a bit of a spot. He like drifts up and down between weight classes. He looks good and then he gets bingoed and then he looks all right and then he gets bingoed.
I mean, he's got a few losses on a run, but they're against like tough dudes like Cowboy, Gillespie and Lando Fanata. Like that's not an easy run, is it?
It is not an easy run
at all. But he's he reminds me, it's something you've said a few times very recently in reference to something else, but he seems like he doesn't come in with a plan. He's just come in to fight and then we'll just see what sort of happens. Like there doesn't seem to be any sort of strategy involved at all. He just sort of rocks up, puts his mouth guard in and goes, oh, well, who am I fighting again? Mm-hmm. Right, let's have a look.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I see it a lot.
Yeah.
I see it a lot. And I think you're right. If you look at the guys he's fighting, the guys that he's lost to, look at Cowboy, you're like, okay, well, I know where Cowboy's vulnerable. I know how to beat him. And he just played into Cowboy's hands. Yeah. They were mates. They had their arm around each other at the weigh-in. And like you're doing exactly the opposite of what you need to do with Cowboy to get inside, to win that fight. He can't really make up his mind for weight classes either. I mean, you know, the Cowboy fight was at 170. And then he had a bout against Mike Perry that was lined up. And he had he got a broken rib and was removed from that bout. And then he was matched up against Gregor Gillespie at lightweight. Like, who's his manager?
Yeah.
Like, what's
the thought? There you go. They haven't got a plan either. No. He doesn't have a plan in there. Exactly, and his manager ain't got a plan.
Maybe
out
he's
there.
His manager.
Yeah. It's tough, isn't it? And I mean, like, Demir is on a bit of a skid as well. And he's lost to Giagos and Moicano, are both, you know, respectable fighters. It'll be interesting. I think Yancey's maybe a little bit better than him. A little bit. Or has the potential to be better at him, but he probably needs to come with some sort of plan.
Yeah. I think the thing I like about Demir is that he's highly conditioned. Mm. He's very assertive and aggressive with his game. Like, he's not going to wait around and see what Medeiros is going to do. Yeah. He's going to walk him down and he's going to try and smash his lights out.
Yeah.
And the thing that Medeiros struggles with a little bit is when he doesn't have that time to think. Like, when it's sparring and there's a bit going back and forth, you know, he's a bit like Cowboy. He's comfortable.
Friendly fight.
And that fight was too comfortable. Whereas Demir will be on his front foot. He'll be chopping his lead leg, and Medeiros has not got the best low kick defense. I'm leaning the opposite way. I think Demir, I understand what you're saying as far as Yancey, because he's been in bigger pools with bigger fighters.
Yeah.
But he's not showed me anything over the last few years that gives me any kind of confidence. And I just don't know as lightweight's right for him. I mean, you know, it's one of those because he can make it kind of circumstances.
I guess 15, not. I mean, he's 5'10". 13, 6, yeah.
He's 5'10". He's not massive, but I don't know. Like, Demir's a solid 155er. I think he's going to look and I think he's going to feel to Madeira stronger. He's compact. He's powerful. He's fighting out of Arta Suave as well. They're a hell of a team.
Yeah, he's lost. He'll lose those fights that he needs to boost him up in the rankings or boost his profile. Like, I know Alan Patrick's tricky. He loses to him. He beats a couple of lower level guys, maybe. Then he loses to Christos, and then he loses to Moicano. He needs to find some consistency, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. He does
massively.
He does. Maybe I'm looking at what his potential is as opposed to what he's actually shown.
He's 34.
Yeah, true.
At lightweight, like you're going to run out of potential years at some stage, aren't you?
Yeah, you are. You make a good point.
Yeah. He looks young, though. Maybe that's why I made you think that. He just looked quite young.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm going Yancey, you're going Demir. Right?
I'm
going
to go Demir. I think he's got the punching power advantage. I think he's going to knock Yancey out.
Right.
Charles Rosa, Justin James.
Yeah, Justin James. I was freaking out at Fight Pass again this morning. And it turns out I'd wrote Justin James in the search. And I was like, where is it? Why is this app so bad? And I just spoke his name wrong. I was like, oh, okay. This is the only time that I'll give it to you, Fight Pass.
Well, according to Tapology, Justin James, his nickname is the Guitar Hero, but his foundation style is Jedi Master.
Yeah, he's not mastering anything at the minute. Maybe he's mastering Guitar Hero, I'm not sure, but he's on a
maybe he's playing too much Guitar
slip.
Hero.
Yeah, he's on a big slip.
Yeah.
He's sort of likable. He's sort of a likable guy, isn't he? Like, he's not, you know, but he's 3 on the bounce.
All stoppages.
He's not, he doesn't have any particular finesse about him, does he? He's sort of a bit of a scrapper. He caught Frank Camacho with a very, very nice left hook, didn't he?
Yeah. I mean, you know, he's got power, but at the same time, Charles Rosa's got a head like a rock. You know, he reminds me a bit of Ally Aquinta.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, right.
He's like kind of hard-nosed. He's got, I'm pretty sure he's a black belt Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Trains out of ATT. Came into the UFC on short notice. I called his debut. He took a short notice fight against Dennis Seaver and lost, but it was a war. It was a great fight.
He's tough. I was talking to Mister about his fight with Bryce Mitchell and just how high level that was and just, you know. He's very, very tough, and Rosa. And I think he's very good. I think his consistency is horrific. Like, I think in the last 9 fights, he's gone win-loss all the way through. Like, he just can't find that the thing that everyone craves, which is trying to get on a run.
Which is crazy because he was undefeated coming into the UFC at 8-0. And then you're right, he is literally alternated since joining the promotion.
You think you're getting somewhere, and then you're right. You know.
Yeah,
all the things you think you can take out of the last camp. Right. Like, oh, I did the same thing. You know,
just no momentum at all.
No, not at all. I think he's too much for Justin James.
He has a win over a Jason Jones. I mean, that's you know that's got to be a good
sign.
Anyone
named JJ and he's going to win it. Is that the level we've got to? Is that how we're making our picks?
Yeah.
Initials are the same.
That makes sense.
I think he's probably got too much. I think Justin James has that power that you know he could cause an upset, but I feel like it would be an upset.
Mm.
You know, he'd have to catch him, wouldn't he? Which, you know, this is the sport, but Rosa for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, I'll go with that. Julia Avila against Julia Stolyarenko. I'm not making the pick until I've seen Stolyarenko on the scales.
She's, I don't know whether she's going to come in heavy on the scales, but she's very heavy footed, isn't she? The way she moves, it's like stomps around the octagon.
Yeah.
Again, not particularly cultured on her feet, but she has some power. Like she's, you know. I think Avila will beat her for speed for sure.
Yeah.
And I think if she can get in and out and stay on the edge, get in and out, get her shots off, get back out, I think she can absolutely beat it for speed. If she, you know, if she gets tied up and in the clinch, she gets tucked down, she better be very, very careful with her elbows because she's going to get armbarred or she's going to attempt to armbar her pretty much from anywhere.
Yeah.
I think it's fair to say we've seen that.
I think at range, the thing that Stolyarenko has got to watch out for, especially if she is battling the scales, is body shots.
Mm-hmm.
It's something like Julia Avila's, she's aggressive. She's naturally aggressive. She's got like a real fiery streak to her. But it's not that she's not calculated with it, though. You know what I mean? Like she attacks several targets. I mean, she's got, like, it was in Invicta. I remember researching her a little while ago. She had a front kick and punches, but then she had that knee to the body against Gina Mazzani as well. Like I could just see her just like, you know what it's like when you've had a horrible weight cut and you just feel kind of delicate. And all of a sudden you've got someone who's a bit of a spitfire. Bang, 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 knees, and she'll just go down.
She strikes me. She's perfect for coaching because she's got pop, which you can't. It's very, very hard to coach into someone to coach that natural twitch of their muscle. But she's got pop, but she just needs. It feels to me like she needs some technical layered over the top of it.
Yeah,
you've got the bit that's very hard to get. The rest of it you can coach that into her, but she needs some very high level technical input into her, and I think she'll be. I think she'll be good.
Yeah.
I think it's 75-25 in my mind that she's too quick. She's too quick for Stolyarenko, but there's always that 25%. She might get hold of her and she might rip her arm off.
Yeah,
which is not a nice thought for her. She's had a Stolyarenko's had a Lathwaite bout.
Oh, she really?
Yeah, Burmese boxing bout.
Nice.
Yeah,
sounds like
we don't see that very often on people's records.
Not very often. Sounds like fun though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, she had 36 seconds of a Lethwei bout.
Yeah. Kunitsukaya showed how to beat her, but I don't think
Avila can do that.
No, I don't think so.
Plus Kunitskaya is big.
Yeah.
She's just a big frame.
And she's leaned on an inch and exhausted her and tied her up.
I think you're right. This is all about space away.
Yeah.
Speed and volume. Bam, 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 make her work hard.
Yeah, chase her a little bit.
I mean, she fell off the scales last time she was weighing in. You know, she's going to be battling the weight unless that was a one-off. But I think she's big for this weight class.
She's just she's just thick. You know what I mean? Like her legs are thick and that must be a tough cut.
Yeah.
Okay. Avila for me.
Marcin Prachnio against Ike Villanova.
Yeah, Marcin... I mean, he's broke his slump, hasn't he? Like he was on a 3-fight slump, and he came back and got a good win over Khalil Rountree. I always think it's an admirable process to be able to break that slump. You know, like your confidence is down, you're questioning everything, and like you know, we don't even you know.
Yo, I've been there. Yeah, I mean,
you start questioning everything, and then you have the tenacity to come back and get that win. It's an admirable. It's admirable, and it also shows a level of psychological strength that is, you know, it'd be easy to quit, wouldn't it, sort of thing. Like, it'd be easy to either leave the promotion or just quit and not know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like Villanova.
He's got some power, isn't he? Has.
Yeah, I remember serious speaking power. To him, and he's just got this. He's just such a blue collar, matter of fact guy. He's like, you know, this is what I do. This is a way of making money for my family. Right. You know? And I like that
prize fighter.
Yeah, that's basically. I mean, that's exactly where he is, and he kind of knows it as well. I mean, you know, he's older, isn't he?
Loads of KOs and TKOs on his record.
Yeah, exactly.
He's not here to mess around. He's here to get that purse, isn't he?
No. Because he's back to work on Monday morning.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, that's kind of what he was talking about. Like, he's driving cross state to go and enter a fight. He don't know who he's fighting until he gets there. He rocks up, knocks the guy out, and then a couple of weeks later, he's back in there fighting somewhere else. And
wow.
You know.
Yeah, that's cool. He's he got that walk-off against Moreira, didn't he?
Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Cracked him and just was like, I'm done. Yeah, too much for Martin, you think?
I don't know. I think Martin's really awkward. He's really difficult to pin down, really difficult to kind of predict what he's going to do. It could make Villanova quite uneasy and not wanting to commit to anything.
But like, just stand in front of him, let me come at you.
Yeah, just hold still for a minute. but then, you know, at the same time, if he is matter of fact about it and he's like, look, you know, I've got heavy hands, all I need to do is connect on this guy, and he's already in a bad spot as well, backed into a corner, you know?
Yeah.
Are you going for Ike?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I do like him. He's a good dude. It's a bit of a coin toss, though. I think Pratt now could make it really difficult and frustrating for him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But we'll go with Ike.
See how it pans out. Eh?
Yeah.
Ike.
Wally Alves against Jeremiah Wells.
I mean, flipping Alves has been around, man.
Hasn't he?
I hadn't seen that much of him, but he's fought like pretty much the whole roster. He's fought loads of the top fighters. He had a really good run coming off Tough, didn't he?
Mm.
And then I think he picked up a couple of losses, lost to Usman, but like probably not the Usman of now.
But still a good Usman, and he had good momentum coming out of the Ultimate Fighter. You know, he picked up good wins. He's got a win over Colby Covington, first round guillotine.
Again, not the Colby now, but...
No, of course.
Yeah.
But then he lost a decision to Brian Barberena.
Yeah.
And that was when Barberena was... That was right in the beginning before everybody realised he was the spoiler guy. You know, who else was it he came in and beat? Like, there were a couple of guys early on. He came into... have a look. Oh, Sage Northcutt, of course. Yeah. Like, he just beat Sage Northcutt, then he beat Wally Alves.
He's quite, who?
Brian Barberena.
Oh, right, and sorry, I see what
he's
you
just,
mean.
He's just a bit of a hard-nosed thug, but with a good base skill set that...
He's a mid-roster guy, isn't he? Yeah. Like, he's just solid. He seems quite a balanced martial artist. He has a skill, he has skills everywhere, but he's not exemplary at any of them.
Mm.
He's just a good, solid, mid-roster, tough guy. He had a bit too much pop for James Krause, didn't he? I watched that earlier today. Yeah. James Krause had a little bit too much pop for him.
Mm.
And he sort of just beat him to the punch a little bit.
Yeah.
But he was hanging and catching him.
And then he just got a bit reckless in the Randy Brown fight. He had him hurt, didn't he? And you get caught in. Yeah, I also didn't realise he was matched up with Jimmy.
Yeah, he was. Jimmy, I spoke to him this morning about it. But I think Jimmy says that they were good to go, and then he jumped in for someone else. I think there was a dropout, and he jumped in on short notice and avoided the warhead.
Well, this new guy, Jeremiah Wells, he looks in wicked condition.
Yeah, I watched him against Gary Baletto.
Okay.
You're
a bit more research this time around.
As long as that lasted. Well, you were coaching this morning while I was watching, catching a couple of these more obscure fights. Yeah, he's just... bit wild, loads of power, quite a bit loopy. But you know, but if loopy connects, you know, there's a lot of momentum behind it, isn't there? I don't think he has the all over level that Alves has.
Mm.
I think it's more likely Alves wins this, but if Jeremiah catches him, he's definitely got enough power in him to do some damage.
Mm.
But it would be. It would definitely be an upset pick. I think Wally Alves has got enough here.
I see. So he's already been matched. He was already matched to fight Miguel Beza as well.
There was loads dropped out of this.
Yeah, well, Bobby Nash and Bobby Lee.
Yeah.
Bobby Nash is a UFC vet, but he had a rough time in the UFC. That was a cancel bout August of last year. Then he had another cancel bout of... So he's not fought since 2019. That's something else to bear in mind. When was Wally Alves' last fight? It's got to be more recent than that. Yeah. Munir Lazez at the start of this year. That's another thing to consider as well. Coming into the UFC, not fighting 2 years.
Nah.
Fighting Wally Alves, who's already been in there against a whole bunch of veterans.
Yeah, tough. It's got to...
It's swaying me.
It's got to be... It's the smart pick, I would say, is Alves, isn't it? And then you've always got a coin flip on someone coming in with a point to prove and, you know, maybe brings the frustration of not fighting for 2 years and, you know, uses that as as fuel.
I mean, he might have been improving for the last 2 years and not a chance to show it.
Yeah.
So, and Wally Alves, he can get caught a bit cold. He does. He fights at a steady pace. He's not always ferocious.
Smart pick for me is Alves, yeah.
Michel Prezeris against Shavkat Rakhmonov.
He's another one. Michel Prezeris has pretty much fought everyone.
Yeah, but at lightweight.
Yeah.
And he's just a little tank.
He is an absolute
tank. Isn't
he
like the Special Forces or something?
That would make sense. He looks like he is.
I think he's some kind of like Brazilian, like Special Forces or like Special Police Service or something like that.
You know there ain't many rules in that police force.
For sure.
Do whatever you want.
There's no drug testing either, I don't
think. No, he is literally a block of muscle.
He is square, isn't he? Yeah. Yeah. Well, people always fuck up his nickname, though, because they always say Tractor, which actually works.
Yeah, he does look like a tractor.
Trator.
Is that what with a different meaning?
Well, it's Portuguese, isn't it?
No, but is it for tractor?
I don't know.
I mean, you never know, right?
I'm going to look it up right now.
30% off. For Reptile. 30% off.
That is a lot, 30%, isn't it?
It's quite a lot.
Especially for people like, you know,
it's
like Ricky
Lundell.
That
much is free. Pretty much that much is free.
Like, Ricky Lundell bathes in this stuff. Like,
yeah, I bet he does.
He would... Oh, we're going to have to send him a crate.
Yeah. We did say that last time and did absolutely nothing about it as soon as the camera switched off.
Oh, we're going to have to ask V.
I'll get on to Angel.
Trator.
Yeah, he's very, very controlling, isn't he? If he gets you up against a fence and he's got a good solid underhook or doubles.
It means
good
tractor.
It makes sense, right? He does look like a Massey Ferguson, whatever they're called.
What? A Casper.
Tractor.
I don't like him in this weight class, and I think Shavkat Rakhmonov's he's one to watch for sure. Like, obviously, you know, Prezeris, he presents a lot of problems because he's got a lot of experience. I mean, 26-3 is a hell of a record, especially for someone that's been in the UFC for so long. You know, he's only losing by decision, isn't he?
Nurudiev.
Kevin Lee.
How's Rakhmonov going to deal with this level of physicality? Because it's a different level to Oliveira's.
It is.
It's a much different challenge to that. He's going to have all his space shut down. He's going to have him in his face and he's going to get tied up.
But he just ruined Alex Oliveira, though. He didn't even make it look difficult.
Yeah.
Like, I just feel like he might be one of those fighters that's... He is a bit special. And we're not going to realize until this fight.
Right.
You know, like, we'll watch him go through this fight and be like...
You put him away.
I think he's going to wreck him.
Yeah.
I do. That is
not on the fence at all from you.
No, I mean, I like Prezeris, but I think there's a point where he's going to downturn. And I think him going up to welterweight and he's being put in against a 13-0 undefeated fighter.
Yeah.
Like...
How tall is he?
He's 6'1", Rakhmonov is, compared to Prezeris, who's like 5'2".
He's 5'2".
No, he's not. I can't believe you'd insult him like
5'6".
Yeah, but you know.
Yeah.
But that's going to be generous because they always stretch that tape measure, don't they? They always leave it a bit baggy at the bottom.
Yeah, he's 30. They do. He's just 39. Just
stand on this yellow pages.
He's coming up to 40. Yeah,
he's coming up to 40. Stand on his phone book.
Yeah. All right. I thought he might be a bit too physical for him, but.
He wasn't too physical for Nurudiev, and I don't think Rakhmonov's going to be pushed around by him. Like, I can see, like, Rakhmonov, for whatever reason, I'm like, he's the kind of guy that's on a similar trajectory to Khamzat Chimaev.
Right.
I just kind of feel like he's one of those...
Some big calls coming from you today.
Mate, I'm just... He's...
You know, be interesting to see that.
He's got that Mongolian blood in him. Put him on a horseback and give him a bow and arrow. Mate. You cannot get away from
shooting
that
apple off your head.
You're dead. Dead meat. They used to drop underneath the neck of the horse and shoot from underneath it.
Yeah, that's why do I know that? I do know that. Probably I don't know why I know you. That, but yeah.
I missed a history reference, aren't I?
Yeah.
At least you know Hannibal of Carthage is.
I do now. DC don't.
He does now.
Oh, I bet he don't.
He knows how I bet he knows card. How to say Spivak. For fuck's sake. Spivak. Spavik.
Sputnik.
Okay.
Right, so put all of your money on Rachmanov.
Put all your money on Prezeris because I picked Rachmanov.
I don't think it works like there's only me that you have to go the opposite to.
This next one's a bit of a sleeper. This is a lot of fun.
Mate, this is a lot of fun.
They've got over 30 fights between them, over 30 wins between them, and only 3 losses. Jaime Barcelos is just skills for days. You know, he's a talented, durable individual that's got a lot of skills and ability to finish in a lot of different positions, even if, you know, no matter what his opponent brings to the table. On the flip side, Timur Valiyev has got really good movement, really good footwork, an excellent kicking game. And, I mean, he's a Russian fighting out of Jackson Wink. He's got wrestling for days.
The thing I liked about Valiyev as well is not unpredictability, as in he doesn't know what the fuck's going on. He's just throwing wild shit everywhere. But his variety in attacks is unbelievable. Like, there's barely any pattern to it at all. He's throwing all kinds of stuff. But that Trevin Jones fight. He buckled Trevin Jones bad, didn't he? I cannot believe he did. He didn't manage to put that away, which is, you know, on a different day, I think a ref could potentially have stopped that. But, you know, kudos to Trevin Jones for battling through that, because everyone knows that pain of that body shot.
Yeah.
And he coming back to get that win is very, very impressive.
But then having it turn to a no contest.
Yeah, yeah. What was it for?
Weed.
Well, that doesn't count. So really, that's in our eyes,
In our eyes,
that's still a win. It's even more impressive in some ways.
It's even more impressive that he came back from a body shot.
Yeah.
Like, when have you ever punched a stoner in the stomach and they've gone down and stood back up again?
No, they're just asleep for 12 hours.
They can't even reach for their snacks.
Do you think Barcelos has an advantage on the floor in any way?
I think he does. I think he does when it comes to solving problems with jiu-jitsu, and I think he does when it comes to punching on the ground.
Yeah.
I think Valiyev's going to be difficult to hold down. I think he's going to have good scrambles. I think it's going to be difficult to get him off your back or off that body lock. But I don't think he's going to do a great deal up close against Barcelos.
Yeah,
I think Barcelos, if he gets space, he's going to be able to hurt him with bigger shots. He throws his elbows with good intention.
It was a beautiful sequence. You'd have loved it, and Jim definitely would have loved it against Barcelos against Taha, where he got him up against the fence, took him down, flowed straight into leg irons, passed guard, took his back. He didn't finish from there, but it was just like, that's five things. Beautiful, worked into each other, smooth transition between the five things. I was like, that's nice.
Love it.
Yeah.
Love it. Yeah. I can't pick this one. I think it's a really difficult one to pick. I mean, I'm leaning slightly towards Barcelos because I've seen Valiyev try and try and not get a finish and then get caught.
Yeah.
By a stoner.
Right. Yeah, I had the same idea. I thought Barcelos might just edge it, but chances are it could be one of the fight of the night.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that not being fun to watch. There's the curse.
And I also think this might be one that we're talking about next week about the split decision. It could be one of those kind of fights because Valiyev's going to be fighting moving backwards if Barcelos is pressuring, but he's still going to be effective doing it.
Yeah. He's got a nice rear uppercut as well if he's fighting off his back foot.
Yeah, he has.
Yeah. He threw a flying elbow. I don't know if you'd have seen it, but he flew a flying elbow off the fence. It kind of
sprung off and
threw an elbow. It didn't quite land, and it was, most people would have missed it. I saw it this morning. I was like, oh shit, you don't see that very often.
Huh.
And if it had landed, it would have been like everywhere. But it just kind of got lost in a little bit of movement.
Yeah. But, I mean, in another universe, in 10,000 other universes, Wacky and Buckley jump for that kick and land flat on his face and got choked out.
Exactly.
We're just in this universe with an inch kick landed. Okay. This is a real stiff test for Jai Herbert and Ato Moicano. And I know we were talking about the fact that he's come up a weight class, and you know, it's not worked out for him every time, but I do think this is the right weight class, and I don't think you can count a loss to Rafael Fiziev as this is the wrong weight class.
That was just pitch perfect, was it? And you know what? Like we always say, he was doing well until he wasn't. He was doing all right. Mm. He stood up with him when, you know, the smart plan was to definitely not stand up with him. But he stood up with him. He was landing. He was definitely landing.
Yeah.
And then he got landed on a little bit better.
Mate, and Fiziev is just an example of how deep this division is.
Yeah.
You know?
He's coming though, isn't he? He's coming.
Yeah. I mean, that UFC, the debut loss, the spinning back kick.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things. I mean, you know, you look at Musasi getting caught by Uriah Hall and you go, well, you know, 10 times out, you know, 9 times out of 10, that kick doesn't land because he doesn't level change into it. It was just one of those times when he got caught clean with the kick. I think he underestimated Mustafayev a little bit. And I also think there was so much hype around him coming into the UFC that it was like, oh, I've got this. Like, watch this, hold my beer, you know? And all of a sudden it was like, shit, wake up call. And then I think he's just
that physio finish, man.
On the gas.
Unreal.
Yeah.
Unreal.
He's so compact and so fast.
The whip on that left hook.
He's 5'8" with a short reach, but it's everything's wow, 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 wow. Like cutting and chopping and it's beautiful.
He just Moicano just played with fire for too long and ended up getting burnt pretty bad, didn't he?
Yeah.
But there was enough in that where it made me think, look, he's good at this weight. This is where he looked big. He looked healthy. He was bigger than Fiziev, wasn't he?
Mm.
And he just sort of looked good. And you know, you're going to get caught. Is this the first fight since Stop the Fight fight?
Yeah,
that's quite a long layoff. That's not such a bad thing.
He needed it though.
He got starched. Yeah. Bad.
He needed it. He did have a cancelled bout though. He was supposed to have fought in February against Drakkar Close, but he pulled out.
Yeah. Jai's good, man. I remember watching him down at Cage Warriors 109, I think.
Same thing with Trinaldo. He was doing really well until he wasn't.
Yeah.
And then he really
wasn't. Well, he was winning, wasn't he? He was winning that fight relatively comfortably.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a competent striker. He's a good martial artist. Mm-hmm. I like how bouncy and sharp he is in and out. He's got a lot of spring to him. He's got a lot of pop to him.
Yeah.
It's a
tough test.
Yeah.
But same as Moicano against Fiziev. It's a tough test, but tougher on the floor.
Yeah.
I think if Moicano decides he wants to stand and trade with Jai Herbert,
it's going
to
be all right.
It's evening out a bit,
yeah.
Because, you know, like Jai Herbert's tall and rangy. He knows how to use his range well. He's got wicked boxing. Mm. You know, he was lighting up Trinaldo and staying safe up until the shot that caught him. I think the smart thing for Moicano to do would be to force him to grapple. And then I think he'd be able to put Jai into a defensive situation and where he'd have to work hard to get out of.
Yeah, I don't know where Jai's grappling's at. He's over
in Birmingham, isn't he?
Yeah.
At Renegade. So he's alongside.
I just don't know what level he's sort of.
I mean, they're good grapplers. I mean, you know, Leon Edwards and Tom Breeze and you know, Aidan Lee's over there, is he?
Yeah.
You know, I
mean, his
good crew. It's a good crew.
With his striking helps him with his takedown D, doesn't he? Because he's hard to get his hands on, and he's angles off a lot and moves a lot, and he's tough to pin into a corner where you can get your hands on him.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's gonna need to do that, because if he goes to the floor with Moicano, I think he's a little bit outmatched. As my perception anyway. I'm seeing too much of Jai on the floor.
Mm. I think that's more because of how good we know Moicano is on the floor as well, you know.
I mean, I hope Jai gets a win for but
it's a tough fight. I'm you know, my sensible head, I'm leaning towards Moicano, probably Rene Kachoke.
Right.
But it'd be good to see. It'd be good to see Jai get back on a win, back on a winning track, of course.
Yeah, I agree.
My logical head, though, is Moicano, for sure. This next one's a good one as well. Nicholas Dalby against Tim Means.
So Tim was matched against Danny Roberts last week, wasn't he? So he must have he must have quickly got on the phone to Dana and said, hook me up for next week.
Yeah.
That's a tough reschedule for him.
Yeah,
but the thing is with Tim Means, he's not going to be too fussed, is he? He's been around forever. He's fought anyone that's been offered to him by the looks of it.
That's it. I mean, you know what you're going to get with Tim Means because he's been around for so long. He's on a good streak at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, and he's, you know, he can take a shot and come back. You know, he's got grappling skills as well.
He's like awkward, but he's now learnt that he's awkward and it works for him even more because he knows how to fight awkward now.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Like, and he's so long as well.
Yeah.
What is he? 6'4", isn't he? Something like that. Like Nicholas Dalby's got to keep this one standing. I think he's got to use his in and out footwork. I think he's got to try and draw Tim Means into what he feels like he's going to be a brawl and then be out and gone.
Mm.
And like something that Dalby uses really well. He used it in Cage Warriors, didn't he? We got a good clip of it.
French guy.
Yeah, it'll come to me in a second. Caught him with a head kick as he was backing up. And it was just, you know, hang on a minute. Alex Lahore.
Yeah.
Mm.
Caught him with a wicked head kick. And I'm not saying he's going to catch Tim Means with a head kick, but I think he can bait him to walking onto shots in a similar kind of way. Because one thing he doesn't want to be doing is battling against the height and reach of Tim Means.
No. And Tim's straight punches are very, very crisp.
Yeah, he kind of snaps him out, doesn't he? It's awkward to get close to him.
Yeah, that's going to be tough for Dalby, man. I think this is a tough fight.
Yeah, it is. Especially on short notice.
Yeah.
I mean, was Dalby matched already? Was he? Oh, maybe he was. He was matched against Sergei Khandushka.
Second time.
Is that right? Jeez. Oh, yeah, he was matched at the end of last year against... Orion Kosei.
Why was the Jesse Ronson loss a no contest? He got choked, didn't he?
Yeah.
He got dropped and choked.
Yeah, was it Jesse Ronson was it? Failed drug tests?
Right.
What was that?
Was it performance or just weed?
Okay.
Well, that counts.
That counts.
Not having that. It's not the Brock years.
And then the Ross Houston fight on Cage Warriors was a no contest because there was too much blood in the cage. It was for real. That's why the fight was abandoned because there was too much blood on the canvas.
Oh, right. So it wasn't like...
It couldn't continue. They couldn't stand up. It was like a fucking slip and slide.
A bloody slip and slide.
It was hilarious, wasn't it? It was brilliant. It was like some kind of like Halloween Spring Break movie where like the fucking murderer got involved.
Scream 18.
It was a mess. It's a lot of fun to watch, though.
I really like Dalby, and I know he's a friend of ours. I think Tim Means might take it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with my heart on this one.
You're really upset about that, aren't you?
I'm going to go with my heart, and I'm going to say that Dalby's going to do it. I think he's going to outpoint him, be able to walk him onto shots and be too fast for him and too smart. Cool. I think he can draw Tim Means into what he feels like is a brawl and be too smart for him.
Hmm.
Oh. Andre Feely against Daniel Pineda.
I feel like Andre Feely is really close to being really good, but he's not quite there yet. He seems to have some of the building blocks he needs.
People who are really good.
Yeah,
maybe that's where your confusion is.
You know, I think there's like a spark in there. Like you know, Air Jordan is like that's a good win.
Oh yeah.
Shaymon Morales is a good win. I know he lost last time out, didn't he, to Bryce Mitchell, which. I kind of like him. I kind of feel like he is not that far away from putting something together. Here's my advice for Andre Feely.
Be a weird kid.
Yeah.
Because he is a weird kid and he loves being a weird kid. He's got odd tattoos and he's always doing, you know, mad things with his hair and shit. Be a weird kid. But be that outwardly. Like, when you're in camp, be a professional fighter. Like the weird kids the clothes that you wear and the things that you say in your interviews, but like there seems to be so much emotion running through his training camps. Anytime you hear interviews, his post-fight interview, he's always sucking through that missing tooth in the front, and I'm like, dude, just take a breath and calm down. don't make MMA, don't make life about MMA.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, like just live
comedy,
MMA.
Comedy job.
For sure. You've got to leave. There's like, I feel like it's partly a job and partly therapy.
Yeah.
And that's where I think he's struggling. Mm. I think he's slowing himself down because the ebb and flow of his emotion is inconsistent enough to affect the ebb and flow of his athletic career.
Yeah.
It just seems to be there's just a lot going on internally.
Yeah.
He needs a couple of weeks in Peru. Get him at the Hummingbird Center.
Yeah. Oh man.
We'll sit him down.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think that'd be
the guy's name?
Zane.
No, the host.
Oh, Jim.
Jim, yeah. Jim at the Hummingbird.
Yeah. But he reminds me a bit of Zane.
Yeah, right, okay.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
He's carrying a lot.
Have you seen Zane now?
No, yeah, he's flying, isn't he?
Flying.
It's awesome.
Flying.
But like that, I think that's the thing with him. Like there's a lot of emotion. You know, I mean, he's still training Alpha Male, which, I mean, if there's you've got to imagine that Matt is all fucking bravado and it's California and everyone's got their shirts off and you know what I mean? It's like, you can't imagine him in a Team Alpha Male in Loughborough. You know what I mean? People are like, what? Fuck off. Alpha Male, dickhead. You know, like that would be the response
get
to
burned
it.
Get down in about 3 days.
But it's like
fucking
that.
Alpha males.
But that's the thing. It's like that kind of permeates the team a little bit. And I don't think that's always necessarily a good thing. Like look how aggro Cody was when he was fighting TJ. Just didn't work. Look how fucking smooth he was against Dominic Cruz.
Hmm.
Like that's the Cody you want.
But that, you know, we're talking about developing cultures in our gym. And that's what you do. Like you develop a culture and then it attracts people because they hear about that culture either way, irrelevant of what the culture happens to be, and then people feed into it and then you get assumed behaviors. So I would start behaving like everyone else starts behaving because this is what we do out of here, and when I'm out I sort of represent everyone else, and so that's what, you know, that's what happens. That perpetuates that cycle.
I can imagine those training sessions, those sparring sessions, to be quite abrasive with certain guys on the team. I bet there's a lot of aggro that's
tension,
not ever taken down and controlled.
Yeah.
You know, there's like outbursts and slamming. I could just imagine it. Mm. It just seems like that kind of, I mean, the Raptors have been there. They've spent some time at Alpha Male, but closed team sessions at the ends of training camps when no cameras are in there. That's when, because I mean, you've got to think of all the drama between, you know, coaches that have passed through and, you know, like obviously Ludwig and Campton was there for a while. And then Chris Holdworth was coaching. Then he went away. And what's his name? Buckles is was a full-time coach. And then he wasn't. He was elsewhere doing his own thing. And you know what I mean? It was
coaching is like should be the most selfless thing possible. And it's like, if you're coaching, your ego still ruling your behavior,
right,
it's not going to end very well because you're the background now.
Yeah,
you're in the background.
Yeah,
you're pulling the strings and setting up environments where people find their paths, whoever that might be. It's not about you. It's nothing to do with you. It's not about you. It's gone. Yeah.
I just wonder whether there's someone there that can pull Andre to one side and be like, okay, let's figure this shit out.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Let's not. Whatever it is that you struggle with on a daily basis, let's just not take it into the octagon.
Mm.
Or let's just take the components that we need that are going to fuel us.
Yeah.
Because like the emotion does come out of him sometimes, and I do think that's why he doesn't make good decisions in fights sometimes. He looks a little bit ragged, you know? He's definitely skilled.
Yeah.
I could give you a list of fighters that are very skilled but a bit ragged because they make bad decisions.
Man, his little skinny legs are going to get whacked by Pineda. How he is a featherweight, like, I just have no concept of how he's doing that.
He's big in real life.
Yeah.
Hey?
He's big in real life.
Is he big in real life? Yeah.
What do you mean?
5'7".
Pineda.
Feely.
Yeah.
Oh, no, Feely. No, yeah, no, but Feely. I mean, he's tall and rangy, isn't he? But Pineda's heavy.
He's like...
He's like thick and heavy.
It looks like he's about that thick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like his bones must be hollow or something, and he whacks that leg kick through, doesn't he?
Yeah,
he was beating the shit out of Cobb's leg before Cobb beat the shit out of him.
It's coming off his first loss in a while, though, and it was a knockout.
Yeah, true. I mean, I can sort of see it going. I thought he was good. I thought he was going well against Cobb Swanson. Like I thought he was picking him apart a little bit to some degree. I can see it playing out relatively similar. Like he's gonna go after those legs and he's gonna try and, you know, kick them out from under him.
Yeah. Different kind of stance with the two. Like Cub Swanson's, I call him, it's the more gunslinger. Like a gunslinger. Yeah. Like him and Eddie Wineland is the other one comes to mind.
Yeah.
You know, similar kind of style. Andre Feely's not quite as vulnerable to that lead leg, and he's got long arms, long limbs that he could potentially be clubbing him down the centre line.
He throws a lovely jab to switch stance to 1-2 back off of that. Like really, really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It looks like he's got all the pieces.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Look, like he has a plan of putting them together.
Hmm.
You know?
Think he's too much of Pineda? Not sure.
I'm not sure. It's a bit of a toss-up, isn't it? Because I can't bank on Andre Feely like I couldn't bank on Vitor Belfort.
You don't know which one's coming.
You don't know which one's showing up.
Mm.
Is he fighting out of anger and frustration?
Yeah.
Or is he fighting because he's had a great camp and he feels healthy?
Tactically and efficiently, yeah. But I think, Pineda's got some, he's got some power.
Well, it sounds like you're leaning towards Pineda.
Maybe a little bit. Maybe a little bit. I like Feely. I do like Andre Feely. I think he's close to being good. He's got to work out how he makes that transition to being good.
Yeah. Or someone around him has.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Danilo Marquez against Kennedy Nsechukwu.
Okay. You changed how you said that from last time. Pretty sure. Anyway, I bet against
Ollie him. Ollie don't remember I, the I last
bet,
time.
I bet against him last time. Against Carlos Ulberg.
Because he looks tired as fuck all the time, doesn't he, when he's fighting? He looks exhausted.
Exhausted. But he played that game, well, I don't know. I wasn't blown away by him. Like, in the Ulberg fight, he's done unbelievably well to win that.
Mm.
Because Carlos pretty much threw everything in his whole arsenal at him. Landed a fair bit, but landed a lot on sort of elbows and forearms. And he managed to take quite a few body shots and sort of walk through them. So I did bet against him, but it didn't blow me away how he sort of won that. Carlos sort of just gassed himself out and, you know, could have been a bit more efficient and probably would have got the win. So I don't know how much we really learnt from that. Other than he can take a bit of damage and keep going.
Mm. I think this is a battle of big guys.
They're two big dudes, isn't it?
Battle of big guys. Both are going to get tired.
Yeah.
And one of them's got a slightly better ground game.
Hug it out at the end.
I think the point of difference is the ground game of Marquez.
Mm-hmm.
I can see them both getting tired, swinging at one another. Nothing particularly hurting them, but then both being fairly exhausted and then them ending up on the floor. And then Sejiku not landing in a grapple-ready position.
Yeah.
Because he just doesn't have those patterns. Danilo
beat Mike Rodriguez into a sub, didn't he?
Choke, yeah.
But beat him up exactly. Until he went.
Yeah.
Choke. Please make this stop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not his first Rear Naked Choke. I mean, he's got one listed on his record here, but he'll have other ones earlier in his career as well when he was rolling through the 0-3 guys or the 8-17 guys on his record. There's an 0-16 guy on his record.
0-16?
I just feel bad. Like, I feel like I was mugging someone.
At what point are you just like, I'm shit at this?
Right?
I'm just shit at this.
But there are...
I'm going to do chess or something because I'm not very good at this.
Yeah, but that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, like, other sports, you can play them and play them and play them. But when it comes to fighting, there's a point where you go, hang on a minute. That's 15 losses on the bounce now. I'll give it one more go. Fuck it. I'll give it one more go. This guy's not going to be a UFC fighter in the future, is he?
Yeah. I mean, what can you say about him? At least his enthusiasm never gets dampened. He's a trier. His enthusiasm never gets dampened.
His mum would be proud.
Yeah.
His nickname's Bad Boy.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Well, he's got to keep fighting, isn't he?
His name's Mark.
Bad Boy.
With a C or a K?
It's got to be a C, surely.
Both.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Mark with a C and a K.
See that very often.
I've got a story for you. And I'm sorry if you've heard this already. I don't think I've told it, though. It's a Goddard story.
He's not into his jits, is he?
He was to fucking hell. Into my jits. He was talking to fucking... He was talking about... This was the last Cage Warriors. He was talking about going to Starbucks and them asking what his name was. And he said... Did I tell you this?
Maybe, yeah.
He said Mark with a K, and it said cock on the side of his drink.
Cock.
Surely, surely the Starbucks dude is just trying to be funny.
It's got to be, hasn't it?
Surely. No one's that stupid.
Well, I mean.
Please.
Maybe not. This bad boy thinks he's going to turn it around.
Bad boy's got to keep fighting.
He's lost all of his fights in the first round.
Oh, wow.
But I tell you what, you look at some of the people he's fought. He's fought Johnny Walker. He's fought Gleison Abreu. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah,
he's fought a few guys. Leander Rivera.
I mean,
Leander Rivera is 0-12. That's the wrong dude. Oh no, he's 0-4. He's 4-0 now. We've gone way off topic. Hang on.
I don't even know what fight we're talking about.
How has this happened? We're talking about Nsechukwu getting tired and getting Rene choked.
Danilo is going to win that.
Yeah,
I think most likely Marquez will win that.
Okay,
this is very interesting.
Yes,
crazy speed versus crazy power. Plus a bit of grapple. Bosa and OSP.
I'm going with Tanabosa.
I think he's... Yeah, how do you reckon? If OSP puts him on his back, how's that going to go?
He'll get up. Reckon? Oh, no, he won't, will he? He didn't against Thingy. That was the That was why he got so frustrated. That was odd, that was. I didn't think he was going to get stuck on his back as he did against Latifi. Like, that was odd. But I kind of feel like he got stuck on his back because he felt like he was winning the rest of the fight because he was.
He just went, oh, fine.
Yeah, it was like, okay.
You're not really scoring. No. Just lie. Yeah.
Like, that's not scoring. I mean,
that's
literally
what I mean,
he's like,
he's not scoring.
He was like, when you're right on the borderline of getting stood up,
there's no points being accumulated. No. I think it's 80-20 in my mind. Tanabosa should beat him for speed, should beat him for counter striking. If OSP gets his hands on him and puts him on his back, I think he's going to do more damage than Latifi did.
Mm.
I think he's got some good ground and pound OSP, and then obviously he's got his sub attacks from there.
I think of OSP and I think to myself, I can't imagine him wrestling someone to the ground.
Yeah, like, I just think from clinch off the cage maybe.
40% takedown accuracy. Yeah, I don't know.
I feel like
Tanabosa should be able to keep him on the feet. I feel like he should. Yeah. And I feel like Latifi's he didn't do a great deal with what he did, but he is a good wrestler. Mm. You know, when he came into the UFC, he's a good wrestler. That's his credential. And he's shorter. So the fact that he could get underneath him and grab him and put him on the floor is not much of a surprise. Whereas OSP's, I mean, he's raw power and he's got really odd movement and a few interesting things that have been added to his game, but he's not an overall martial artist, not like Bosa is. He's a football player with some punches and a Von Flucho.
Yeah, right.
You know? And he is getting
strange
better.
Strange combination.
Yeah, but I mean, he is getting better, don't get me wrong. But, like, you look at the Shogun knockout where he punched him, the counter left hook on the pivot, knocked him into the fence. Like, even though it was a really effective punch, it wasn't, like, athletically it wasn't correct. It was all over the place. He's like...
He expresses enough power that even though it's not technically correct, this still does enough damage.
Exactly.
Because power is power. Like, it's more efficient to throw it with technically correct, but the power is still going through someone's skull.
That's it.
If you can get it there.
That's it. And it's that awkward angles. He comes at weird angles. Yeah. I mean, you think of the Patrick Cummins knockout. Like, that was going backwards on one leg, looking the opposite direction, uppercutting him across his chin as he was level changing it. Like, the only way that works, the only way you train that into someone is you go, just hit him in the head as many times as you can.
Yeah, right.
Just hit him whenever you can, just hit him in the head. It seems like his game
plan.
Yeah. There's not a great deal of structure to it. And his coach is always very animated as well.
He's lost to a lot of people that are above a mid-tier kind of fighter, do you know what I mean? Like, Ben Rothwell's been around, Dominic Reyes, we've seen Krylov, Latifi, Ozdemir. Mm. Yeah.
Mm. I think if I've played this fight out in my head and I think to myself, okay, what's most likely to happen? Bosa's going to be able to manage the range between them enough for OSP to be out of his depth.
And counter right hand over a sloppy jab.
Yeah.
Because
OSP's one of those... When things are coming in his direction, he like closes his eyes and puts his hands out. And Bosa's old school karate. Like he uses those feints, and he's got that beautiful mullet that sways in the wind as well. It really sells his feints. You go,
like a double feint.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, muscle, you know, mullet feint.
And how did he beat Philippe Lins? Was that the counter right over the top? Oh, backhanded him, didn't he?
Karate chopped him on the floor.
Very disrespectful.
Nah,
it's not. Like it. yeah, all right.
I'm just leaning towards Tanabosa because he's a better martial artist. Mm-hmm. I think OSP's got a lot of the physical attributes that could be exemplified with good skill. I just don't know if OSP's got the skill right now. Which is crazy given the fact that he's 40 fights into his career.
Yeah.
I just don't feel like he loves it. I feel like he kind of came to the end of his football career and was like,
oh, shit. I need some money.
Yeah, waiting for the phone to ring and it didn't. So he was like, well, what are my other options? Walked into an MMA gym and the coaches were like, oh,
we
shit.
We could do something with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's kind of a bigger John Jones.
Yeah.
You know? But I also, I don't know anybody else fighting out of his gym.
No, is it Knoxville?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've built a whole team around him, which also concerns me.
I don't feel like he's a big enough or skilled enough dude to be building a team around, yeah.
No, but then if they're bringing guys in to spar with him, who are they bringing him in and how are they pushing him?
Yeah,
I'm just looking at the other guys in the gym here. No disrespect. I don't know any of these people, but no disrespect to them. But my point is they're not training champions, you know what I mean?
You've got to have a gym full of guys that are within 10 or 15% of each other.
Yeah.
Because just by nature, it just pushes everyone up as a group. You know, there's always going to be a couple of, you know, sharks at the top. But, you know, you can't have that guy that stands out because his level, you know, we've seen it. We've chatted about this before, is that, you know, you've got to have, all of the guys have to be challenged in an area. Otherwise, the guy who's standout in one area goes backwards because he's not, you know, he's not challenged in that area.
Yeah.
And we're lucky that we've got Jimmy.
Yeah.
Just roll him in.
Horrible. Yeah. Horrible rounds. Yeah, I'm just not massively sold on OSP. I think he's experienced a lot of success based on the fact that he's managed to catch people with stuff, not because he's done any kind of planning. I think his Von Flu choke's really coming on, but that's also quite a circumstantial choke to get because the person needs to be holding you in a guillotine. And I'm sorry. When it's already been used twice in the UFC, like, don't put your fucking head in that position.
Yeah, right. Like, you deserve this.
You know what I mean?
If you're going to put your head there, you deserve this.
Like, someone should have walked into Yushin Okami's dressing room before that fight, and they should have just gone, just watch this.
don't do that.
Like, it was like after the fight, everyone was like, oh my God, you called it exactly. I'm like, yeah, because I fucking knew what was going to happen. It's easy to talk yourself through a submission when you know exactly the submission that he's going to use because he's already nailed two people with it.
And has he got anything else? Any other subs on his record?
I don't think he has. No, I don't think he has.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, that's a loss.
No, he has. He has a verbal submission. Head kick over Corey Anderson. Oh, it's straight arm lock against Titan. Yeah, but that was an awkward thing as well. It was, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It wasn't like a black belt level jiu-jitsu wrap up and
opportunist.
Yeah.
All right, we'll go with Tanner. We'll leave OSP alone because if he hears this, he's going to cry because you've decimated his reputation.
It just frustrates me. It frustrates me when someone's right at the top of the division, they just don't seem to be progressing. I mean, at least try and get better to make your life easier. Even if you're not interested in making any more money, just don't get beat up as much. Or don't look as awkward in there or as, like, tired or as, like, timid. Oh, I fucking hate seeing that. Oh. Honestly, he was terrified of Jimmy Manoa.
Yeah. Yeah,
like, he was terrified of Jimmy. I'm like, dude, like you're like 2 inches taller than him and probably 15 pounds heavier than him, and you probably hit just as fucking hard.
Yeah,
probably. The difference is he's a tiger, and you're not.
Yeah,
that was the difference in that fight, and the fear was emanating off him as he was backing up, and he just poof.
Bink. Yeah. All right. Let's leave him alone before.
Anyway,
Tanabosa. So, main event. Fascinating main event. I know you've done a war room on it, and yeah. I haven't watched it, so I don't regurgitate what you've said, but it is a fascinating fight.
Very supportive, is it?
Well,
very supportive, is it?
I will watch it.
I'll be watching the view count. I get an email or a tweet from everybody that watches the show. So I'll know if you're lying to me.
No, you won't. And I will watch it.
I'm gonna start dropping Easter eggs in there just for Ollie. I'll give you a key word to repeat to me at some point, and I'll go, the key word is pumpkin.
I mean, it's impossible to watch anything nowadays and just watch that. I'll be on my phone and the TV will be on and there'll be three kids in the background. So I'll be like, I missed it. Sorry, yeah. I just missed it. You know. Anyway, this is...
Everyone's saying don't have as much screen time. No one's saying don't have as much kid time, are they?
No.
Like, you need to cut down the amount of time you're spending with your kids this week.
No.
You know? Like, you have a counter on you. Imagine if your kids had a counter on them.
Well, they're all on their screens nowadays anyway. So it's just like a room full of screens.
So you know how much time you've given the kids by how much time they've not spent on the screen.
Yeah, there's an app.
So if they've got 18 hours, you know you've had them for...
4.5 minutes. I've had them for 4.5 minutes today.
There we go.
That's enough.
Oh, wicked. Go on, give me a take down on this fight then. Give me your take on this fight.
I mean, they're both... The reason that I think this is fascinating is because they're both excellent. In quite different ways. They're contrasting styles, really, aren't they? Cyril's very, very bouncy. He's got that in and out, heaps of pop. I know I always say the same thing, but he's got heaps of pop, which I think is a very useful trait, especially at the weight, because it's not prevalent everywhere. Super athletic. I'm a little biased because I think that is the heavyweight of the future. I don't think he's quite yet. But that might just be in the next couple of years where he develops into the heavyweight of the future. But this hell of a test, because Volkov has been around. He's
the heavyweight of now.
Yeah, he's long.
He's the ghost of Christmas.
Because he sort of he knows what his game is.
Exactly,
he knows exactly how to do it, and he's got some a real nice array of long range strikes, which obviously suit him because of his length. And he knows how to do it. He's got some nasty ass body shots. He beats the leg up and beats the body up. I just think it's a real tough fight for Cyril. But I do think ultimately Cyril will come through to be champ one day, I think, because he does. I mean, it depends, doesn't it, on his psychology and his game planning and his tactical aspects and how he adapts that. But the way he operates as an athlete, I think, is the future. I just don't quite know whether it's a generation too early. And this is what they all end up looking like. But it might be a generation too early. Like, you know, it's a whole other cycle that we see in the UFC before we see that the heavyweight's looking like this. Everyone bouncing, everyone in and out, everyone super elastic. You know, the flat-footed, back-foot sliders sort of disappear. And the athletes come through.
Yeah, I agree.
Tough gig.
I agree with everything you said. And I do, I mean, Cyril's 8-0 and he's got kickboxing experience, but not a great deal. I mean, he's still under 20 fights pro total. Whereas then you look at Volkov on the other side, who has been around the world in a variety of different organizations. He's always been fighting guys that are shorter than him that are trying to close range down. So he's been able to establish his understanding of his height and reach and his weapons against a variety of different people that are trying to close distance at different speeds. The challenge with Cyril is his lateral movement. The forward and backward movement can be negated by the fact that Volkov can hit him first. Like, Volkov can hit him from a distance before Gann gets into range to land his own shots. The downside is that because he's got such lateral movement, if Volkov commits to a straight shot, Gann could already be at one of the angles, especially if that's a rear front kick, which he uses really well against a lot of people, but a lot of people that stand still. Like, Walt Harris gets backed up against the fence. He got jabbed in the midsection with that because he was stationary. Whereas if
Cyril's not going to wait that long,
he's not
going
to do that. No, he's not, because the thing is, as soon as he sees that twitch, he's gone. And if Volkov commits to that kick, he could be exposing the side to Cyril, where he can get peppered with a couple of shots.
Yeah,
like that's the swing point for me. I don't think that Cyril's got the grappling to be able to get Volkov down, but I don't think Volkov's grappling is necessarily the best in the division either. You know, so I think the grappling exchanges could be competitive, but I think Volkov's takedown offense is good enough to stop Gann getting to the floor.
It takes like a Curtis Blaze to to be that good at wrestling to get him down, doesn't it?
And they have to be consistent in their attack as well. And I don't know if that's a good use of Gan's energy.
We haven't seen that from Gan at any stage, have we?
Not the heavy wrestling side. I mean, he won his first two fights in the UFC by submission. You know, he's got an arm triangle and a heel hook.
I just don't remember him smothering people and dragging them to the canvas at all.
But he didn't have to wrestle those guys to the floor because they weren't exactly you know anti grapplers themselves. Mm. I think this is going to be a kickboxing match, and I think if Gan's smart, he's going to be moving laterally and stinging as much as he can. And I think if Volkov's smart, he's going to use his steady footwork, straight punches to back him just up, and then just keep chopping that leg.
Close him into a space he can manage.
I try and immobilize him as much as I could, though, with those kicks. Yeah. And Gan is a bit delicate. He has had a few injuries. You know, because he's so springy and so elastic, and he's, you know, I think he's always in the gym.
Yeah, I just think he looks like he's always in the gym.
Yeah, I think he's. Yeah. I think there might be a, you know, you might be able to damage and slow him down. Like, he's worked around injuries in his last couple of fights as well, and that's something else to bear in mind. Whereas Volkov is, you know, he's found his rhythm, as you said. He's maturing his career now.
That's the word. He's maturing his game, isn't he? Like, he knows he sort of
knows his weapons.
You know, you sort of say that about people, like they know themselves now. Like, they're mid-40s or whatever, they've been through the bullshit and they sort of know who they are now or whatever. Yeah. He just seems to know who he is as a fighter.
Yeah.
He knows what he's not going to try. You know, it'd be amazing if he did do this, but he's not going to throw, like, a spinning back fist when he shouldn't. You know what I mean? Like, he's not going to take those risks.
He won't make bad decisions.
Yeah.
He'll use a variety of weapons, but he'll know when he's applying them. You know, he'll know when he's going from a front kick to a knee. And he'll know when he's closing someone down with punches and they're closing distance, so he's going to have to build a frame or grab a neck or start hitting with elbows.
Tough, man. I kind of want Gane to win it, but it's a really tough matchup.
Mm. I mean, I don't mind either way. I'm not invested either way.
Yeah.
My only concern is if Cyril wins, then he's up again.
Mm.
And it's another guy that he might not be quite ready for because he's only had 9 fights.
He's been 9-0 and basically at the top of the division, isn't he?
Mm.
Yeah. I was going to go with Cyril, but I think I might go with Volkov.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think he just might be a bit...
seasoned.
He might have a better command of the space, of the environment a bit.
Mm.
Mm. And Cyril's definitely got the tools and the weapons to do it. But I think the experience...
He's 31. I mean, that's actually sort of mid-age for a heavyweight, isn't it? 31, it's coming into...
Whereas Volkov's...
You could say prime heavyweights are sort of 34 to...
Volkov's 32.
Is he?
Yeah.
Shit. Tough Russian paper round.
I thought he was a Russian assassin for 15 years at least. Before he even started his MMA career, right? Took a brief 32. Sabbatical, you know.
So yeah, coming into his prime as well.
That'd be really funny. That'd be a real good story, wouldn't it? You know, like... The Korean Zombie took 2 years military service and he took a 2 year sabbatical to be an assassin.
He's too big for an assassin. He'd be like,
can't creep anywhere, can he? Can't
blend into a background anywhere.
Can't creep anywhere. That bloke in Loughborough yesterday was an assassin. The way he was smoking his cigarette, it's like, you don't want to smoke that cigarette. That's a cover.
You don't even like cigarettes.
Who have I pissed off? Who have I pissed off that's got money? Oh, hang on a minute. I best go on the phone to Diego Sanchez. He might know something.
6'7". That's a big assassin, that is.
It's a big assassin, isn't it?
Yeah.
That'd be a good nickname for him.
Sniper, I suppose.
The big assassin.
Yeah.
No, Drago's good. He's got a wicked tattoo on his back as well.
He does.
It's growing. Very okay.
Cool. Very cool. All good. All right.
All right. Well, you good better card. Get to the gym and I better record some other stuff.
Awesome.
Nice Done. One.
See you next week.
See you next
big
week.
Big one next week. Big one next week. The Connor effect.
Mm-hmm.
Of as always.
All right.
All right, see you then.
Nice one.